We'll turn to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. We're going to read there in just a little bit. And while you're turning there, I'd just like to say, isn't it such a wonderful thing to have our college kids back with us? Amen? There is just such an energy and just such a joy that just bubbles beneath the surface. You can almost feel it when you guys are back. So thank you so much for coming. Thank you for worshiping with us. Thank you for encouraging us with your presence, with your singing, and with your study alongside us. It is such a blessing. And I, for one, truly have enjoyed the singing since they've been back. And I am looking forward to this Wednesday when we have the opportunity to have these young people, whichever one so chooses to come, these young men to come lead us in song. I'm looking forward to that so much. I know that's going to be a wonderful thing coming up this Wednesday. I want to start by asking you a simple question this evening, a simple question that's very, very challenging, and it's this. Are you making the most out of what God has given to you? Are you making the most out of what God has given to you? I think that is such a vital question, such an important question when it comes to my walk with God, when it comes to my goals in serving Jesus. Are you giving it all? Are you making the most out of what God has given to you? There's a parable that Jesus told. A parable that helps us see how important it is to be asking that question. It's a very familiar parable, but I ask you to please read along with me and read it as if you were reading it for the first time. Matthew chapter 25, in verse 14, Jesus says, "For it is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his way. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. And his master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Also, the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, 'Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid, and I went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours.' But his master answered and said to him, 'You wicked and lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he has shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'" The good Bible students that I'm sure you are, I'm sure you noticed that this parable runs very parallel to our lives as Christians, doesn't it? We notice there are very many parallels between how I serve Jesus and how those slaves serve their master. We notice that like those slaves, we all have been given something very valuable, right? We have abilities, we have talents, we have opportunities that we can use, things that we can accomplish for God while we live on this earth. And like the master in the story, Jesus has left for a while, but he's going to come back. And when he comes back, just like the master, he's going to expect that I took those things that he gave me, that I took the talents he had given to me, and I did something with them. I accomplished something for his purposes on this earth. And just like the 1 talent man, sometimes we're tempted to squander the valuable things that have been given to us. That's what he does. The one talent man has been given something precious, something valuable by his master, but he does not make the most out of what has been given to him. And we're tempted to do the exact same thing with the abilities God has given to us. And that's why I think the one talent man is so important. That's why I think he's such a helpful character, because he doesn't just help us see how God feels when we waste our ability. He helps us see in this parable exactly why we sometimes waste our ability. He helps us see how our mind works. He helps us see the excuses we sometimes make, the justifications we try to make for wasting the talents that God has given to me. And so tonight what I want to do with you is I want to take a closer look. I want to zoom in on the one talent man. I want us to notice how he thinks, how he acts, so that we can make sure we don't make the same mistake that he made. We can make sure that we make the most out of what God has given to us. And as we study him, I want you to remember what the main point of this parable is. The main point that Jesus is making in this parable is this, that you and I, brothers and sisters, you and I have at least one talent too many to have nothing to offer Jesus when he returns. You and I have at least one talent too many to spend my life on earth and end up at the end of my life with nothing to show for it, with nothing I've accomplished for my Lord and my Master. I have at least one talent too many to justify offering my Lord nothing when he returns. And so let's think about the excuses, the justifications the one talent man makes. I want us to notice this first of all. I want us to notice that you have at least one talent too many, brothers and sisters, to say that I have nothing to use. You have at least one talent too many to say I have nothing to use. That is the most common excuse we give for not using our abilities, for not utilizing the talents God has given to us. We tell ourselves, I'm not doing anything in the kingdom because I have nothing to contribute. I don't have any talents. I don't have any abilities. My tool belt is empty. I've got nothing to offer. And I want you to see, brothers and sisters, in this parable, I want you to see the one talent man, even though he is the one talent man, not even he stoops so low as to say he has nothing to use. Not even he is willing to say that. You know, we do a lot of comparisons in this parable. We like to talk about this parable and compare the different level of talents that these guys got. We compare the five-talent guy with the two-talent guy with the one-talent guy. And what we like to say about the one-talent guy was he probably was offended, right? We say he probably was offended. He probably thought he was small and insignificant because he didn't get five talents like the other guy. And that may be an acceptable and valid point to make, but I want you to understand this, that sometimes in that discussion, sometimes when we compare the five-talent man to the one-talent man, we forget something. We forget that a talent is a chunk of change. We're not talking about pennies here, are we? A talent is a considerable sum of money. This is not the widow with two mites. This is not a penny that you find under your seat in the car. This is a chunk of change, possibly tens of thousands of dollars in our currency. And I want you to understand that the one talent man, he recognizes that he has been given something valuable. He recognizes that he's been given something that is worth something because of what he does in verse 18. Did you see that? Matthew 25 in verse 18, but he who had received the one talent went away. He dug a hole in the ground, and what did he do? He hid his master's money. Now, let me ask you a question. When's the last time you found a penny on the ground? And then you ran into your backyard, dug a hole, and buried it so no one would steal it. Right? When was the last time you found a penny in the grocery store and you picked it up and you got in your car real fast? You drove to the bank to deposit it before someone could steal it from you. Right? You don't do that because pennies are worthless. You don't bury it in the ground and hide things that don't mean anything. The one talent man knows. He may not have what the five talent man has, but he has something that's worth something. He has something that's valuable. He had at least one talent too many to be able to say, I have nothing to use in service to my Lord. And I want us to understand, brothers and sisters, that the same is true for us. The same is true for you and me. That all of us, every single one of us, have been given at least one talent too many to be able to say, I have nothing to use. I can't say that. You can't say that. Don can't say that. Nobody here can say that. We all have at least one talent too many to say that. Now, there are seasons in life when it feels like that, doesn't it? Maybe I've experienced some kind of disappointment. I'm feeling real sorry for myself. And I think I just have nothing to offer God. I just have nothing I can do in this kingdom. I'm just worthless. Maybe we tried to do something with our talents and it went badly. Maybe I tried to do something good for somebody. I tried to do something in the public worship. I tried to serve somebody in some way. And I experienced a setback. It didn't go very well. And in those moments, it's easy for me to think, I just have nothing to offer. I can't make a difference in the kingdom. We especially feel that way when we run into five talent people. Doesn't that happen when we see those people, those five talent characters, and we see what they can do, and we see all the wonderful things they can do? We see the tremendous way they're able to lead singing. We see what a great preacher they are. We see what a great personal evangelist they are. We see how good they are at being a social butterfly or encouraging or serving. And we see those people who are super good at the way they serve God. And when I look at them and I look at myself, I think, I'm nothing compared to them. I got nothing to offer. Let me tell you, college students, I guarantee you at some point this semester, you're going to feel that way. At some point in this semester, you're going to feel like compared to somebody else, you have nothing to offer God. You have nothing to do, nothing you can accomplish in His kingdom, right? Because something's going to happen on campus. There's going to be a Devo, or there's going to be a service project, or there's going to be something where someone rises above the pack and proves themselves to be a five-talent person and does something just amazing. And in that moment, you're going to look at that person, and instead of praising God for their ability, you're going to think, well, that's disappointing. I can't ever do anything like that. I have nothing to use. I can't contribute. And that doesn't just happen to college folks. I think it'd be very easy for somebody who's a new convert, somebody who's just started their walk with Jesus, to feel the exact same way. Look at all these people who've been serving Jesus and doing all these wonderful things for Him for 40 years, and to think, I've just been doing this for a while, just a short period of time, and I'm never going to get to that level. I can never do things the way they do things. I guess I must not be able to do anything. And don't you think that would be something that some of our older saints would feel sometimes too? Where there was a time in their life where they had considerable talents. They could do all kinds of things. They had energy, they had ability, they had all kinds of opportunity, and they used that opportunity, but now they're at a point in their life where they don't have the energy, where they can't do what they used to be able to do, where they get tired more easily, and they may look at their life right now, and they may look at what they used to be able to do and what they're able to do now and say, I don't know why God's keeping me here. I don't have anything to contribute anymore. And I want you to know that whoever you are and wherever you are, whenever you get that feeling that I have nothing to use, that I'm used up, that I can't do something important for God and His kingdom, I want you to remember this simple truth. And that is simply this, that God doesn't make zero talent people. God doesn't make zero talent people. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 18, in the middle of this discussion where Paul is comparing the members of the body of Christ to the members of the human body, and he's talking about how we all have our different abilities, we all have our different talents, we all have our different jobs that we do. Paul says this important phrase here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 18. He simply says this, but now God has placed the members, each one of them, in the body, just as He desired. I want you to remember that whoever you are and whatever level of ability you have, God has placed you in the body just as He desired. God gave you what He gave you on purpose. God gave you whatever level of ability you have on purpose, and He puts you where He wanted you to be. God doesn't make zero talent people, even when it feels that way. Brothers and sisters, you and I have at least one talent too many to be able to say, I have nothing to use. I can't accomplish anything for him in his kingdom. And I think it's important to add this to this discussion. I think it's important for us to say that God doesn't love five talent people more than he loves one talent people. And God doesn't love two talent people more than he loves one talent people. I think it's important for us to recognize that. I think it's important for us to recognize what God does love. What God really loves in scriptures when it comes to our abilities and when it comes to our talents is not, he doesn't love the people who can do a bunch of different things really well, more than everybody else. You know what God really loves? God really loves when one person finds what they're really good at, when one person finds their skill, when one person finds their niche and they give themselves totally to it. That's what God loves. That's why in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 15, Paul told Timothy to be absorbed in these things. That was his skill, to be an evangelist, to preach, to spread the gospel. And Paul told Timothy, I want you to be eaten up by that. I want you to be absorbed in that skill and use it to the glory of God. Brothers and sisters, we all have a talent somewhere. We all have some kind of ability. Every single one of us have at least one talent too many to be able to say, I have nothing to use. Not even the one talent man said that. But here's what the one talent man did say. And I want to tell you right now that you have at least one talent too many to be able to say, I'm too afraid. You have at least one talent too many to say, I'm too afraid. Because that's what the one talent man did. Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 24. And the one also who had received the one talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. The one talent man is paralyzed by fear. He's worried that if he goes out and he tries to do something with what his master has given him, that something's going to go terribly wrong. He's going to try to wheel and deal in the marketplace and it's going to go sideways for him. He's going to lose everything trying to work for his master. He's scared he's going to fall short of his master's high expectations. And I think the thing we have to appreciate about the one talent man is that he's not wrong. He's not wrong in being afraid of his master. He's not wrong in feeling that about his master. Look at how he describes his master in verse 24. He is a hard man, reaping where he has not sown and gathering where he scattered no seed. He is an excellent businessman. And I want you to appreciate this as well, that when the one talent man says that to the master, when he says, you're a hard man, and I was scared of you. The master doesn't look at the one talent man and say, I can't believe you'd say that about me. That's not who I am at all. I'm just a big softy. You had nothing to worry about ever. What does the master do instead? The master actually, in verse 26, he confirms the fears of the one talent man. He said, all that stuff you said about me, that I am a good businessman, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter seed, you were right about all that. You were right about that. But the master makes an important point to the one talent man. And that is simply this, that he'd been given something far too valuable to justify sitting on the sidelines. That fear is never an excuse. It's never a good enough justification to waste the wonderful gift that his master had given to him. He had been given something far too valuable to justify letting it waste away. He had one talent too many to be able to say, I'm too afraid. And brothers and sisters, we need to recognize that the same is true of us. That all of us have been given at least one talent too many to be able to say, I'm too afraid to use it. I understand that when it comes to working for God, that comes with a certain level of fear. And it's not wrong to be afraid. It's not wrong to be afraid. In fact, it might even be right to be afraid to a degree when it comes to working for God. And I know that's true. I know that's true because every time I do this, it's accompanied by fear. Every single time I approach the idea of standing up before an assembly and trying to preach the word of God, there's fear associated with that. I'll tell you exactly how it works. It works the same way every single week. Every single week on Friday when I leave the office, there's a pang of fear in my stomach, right? I'm leaving the office. I'm officially done writing my sermon, right? What's going to happen on Sunday is going to happen on Sunday. There's that pang of fear, right? And then on Saturday night, right before I close my eyes and go to bed, there's that pang of fear. This is your last chance. This is your last chance to fix anything that's broken in that sermon. All right? If you go to sleep right now, you're not going to have time to fix it. Pang of fear right there every Saturday night when I close my eyes. And then there's a pang of fear. Every time I look up on the board and there's that marking in the corner that says end of song, right? Because that's the last slide before I got to get up here and I got to do something important. There's fear associated with that. Because the job that I have is a tremendous responsibility and it carries huge ramifications. There are times that absolutely scares me to death. It's not wrong to be afraid. In fact, I would say when it comes to doing things for God, it is right to be afraid. But this parable points out something so important about fear, something we cannot afford to miss, and it is this, that fear should not paralyze. Instead, fear should motivate. Fear should not paralyze. Instead, fear should motivate. You know, when we are scared of something, we have two options. We can respond to that in two different ways. One option is I can let it paralyze me. I can say, I'm scared. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to be involved in that because I'm scared and I just don't want to do it, right? So I can be paralyzed by fear, or I can be motivated by fear. I can let the fear, I can let the enormity of what I'm about to do make me realize that I need to give my best effort into this, make me realize that this needs to be something that is top notch. This is something I need to be dedicated to. This is something I need to spend time on, and energy on, and effort on. I can either let fear paralyze me or fear motivate me. And brothers and sisters, when it comes to making the most out of what God has given us, I need to choose the second one. I need to let fear motivate me, not paralyze me. Have you ever been too afraid? You ever been too afraid? So afraid that you wasted an opportunity to use your talent. Young men, have you ever let fear cause you to pass up the opportunity to serve the Lord in public worship in some way? You ever let fear keep you from sharing the truth of the gospel with someone that you love? Here's a big one. You ever let fear keep you from picking up the phone and calling somebody who's in distress, somebody who needs comforting? We have to understand, brothers and sisters, that fear can either paralyze us or motivate us. And if we want to make the most out of what God has given to us, we have to let it motivate us. Because the truth is, what I've been given is far too valuable to let it go to waste. And the master is never going to be pleased if I let it dwindle away and shrivel up. We have at least one talent too many to sit on the sidelines and say, I'm too afraid. And finally, we need to appreciate this. That I have at least one talent too many to say, you have what is yours. Because of his fear, the one talent man, he hid his talent. But when he's talking to his master, there's another excuse. There's another justification that he tries to make. Another way he tries to make it okay that he wasted all this opportunity and all his talent. And he does this in verse 25 where he says this, Matthew 25 and verse 25, the one talent man says, and I was afraid and I went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. See, you have what is yours. See, what the servant is doing here is he's trying to justify his inaction by pointing out to the master that the master didn't lose anything. Right? The master is getting everything back just as he left it. The servant didn't skim off the top. He didn't take 5% of it, leaving the master only with 95%. The master is getting all of the talent back. He's missing nothing. He gets his talent back, even if it may be a little bit dirty. See, you have what's yours. And I don't know about you guys, but at first glance, that seems like a really reasonable position to me. Doesn't it seem like that to you? I feel like the master should be okay with that. I left one talent with the guy. At least he didn't lose the talent. I'm getting my whole talent back. No harm, no foul. Everything's equal. Everything's fine. But the master's not fine with that. He's not at all. And I think that's a little bit weird because you know what? When I borrow something from you, right, I expect to give it back to you in exactly the same condition that I took it, right? When I house it for you, what do you expect when you come back home? You expect that I didn't rip holes in the drywall and throw a wild party and destroy your house, right? You expect that. You know what you don't expect? You don't expect me to upgrade your kitchen, do you? Right, when I borrow something from you, you expect to get it back exactly how you gave it to me. So why is the master upset if he truly does have what is his? And the answer is really simple. The master doesn't have what is his. You see, the master did own the talent, but that's not the only thing he owned. The master also owned the servant, which means he didn't just own the talent. He owned the energy. He owned the effort. He owned the abilities. He owned the time of his servant. And so when the master returns at the end of his long journey and he finds that the entire time he was gone, his slave, the person that he owned, has done absolutely nothing, he is right to point out that indeed he does not have what is his. The servant had been given one talent too many to sit back and do nothing and then look his master in the eye when he came back and say, see, you have what is yours. The master didn't have what was his. And family, I trust that you can see the connection from that to our lives as Christians today. That all of us have at least one talent too many to waste our days on this earth accomplishing nothing for the Lord, to be able to look at him when he returns and say to him, Lord, you have what's yours. Because if I've done nothing, if I've accomplished nothing, he doesn't have what's his. I think that's an especially tempting thing to believe. That I can do nothing and God can still have what is his. I think it's especially tempting to believe it in a church like this one. Especially tempting to believe it in a church that has so many people, in a church where so many people are working so hard, in a church where so many people are doing so many good things. You know, as a part of this church with so many people, so many good, hardworking people, it's very easy for me to sit back in my pew and to think to myself, you know, we have plenty of guys who participate in the public worship service. The pulpit is full. Jonathan and Don take that up. Carrie does a good job with the evangelistic work, right? He's having one-on-one studies all the time. The elders, they're really hospitable, and a lot of other families are hospitable too. The deacons, they take care of everything around the building. They're doing their job great. It's easy for me to sit back as a member of this church, looking at all the things that are being done, and even though I've done nothing, to say in my heart, God has what is his. That as long as this church is humming, and as long as all the slots are filled, and as long as there are other people who are doing good things, God has what is his, even though I haven't done anything myself. But what we learn in this parable, what we learn throughout the rest of the Bible, is that that's just not true. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 20, as we read in our Bible reading at the beginning of this service, Paul says, you have been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body. And quite simply, he tells us there that I am not my own. That God doesn't just own the church. God owns my body. I am an instrument for him. And my job, because I have been bought, because he possesses me, because he owns me, my job is to glorify him with the body that he gave to me. And that means this is very true, brothers and sisters. We have to appreciate this, that God doesn't have what is his until you use what is yours. God doesn't have what is his until you use what is yours. That's true for the people here who are new to the faith. That's true for the people here who are older. That's true for the people here who have 5 talents and 2 talents and 1 talent. That's true for the college kids who just showed up. Even though this church is humming along, and there are so many amazing things that this church does, you guys ought to be commended for that. Just because there are so many other people doing so many wonderful things doesn't mean God has what is his. God doesn't have what is his until you use what is yours. And only when I stand up and I use the talents that God has given me and I accomplish things in his kingdom, may I confidently declare, may I confidently look at God and say, "See, Lord, you have what is yours because I've used what is mine." And so, brothers and sisters, I point you back to the question that we began with this evening. And that's simply, are you making the most out of what God has given to you? I hope you understand that the body of the Lord is a place to work. Hope you understand that Christianity, as I believe Don pointed out this morning, Christianity is not just about avoiding things. It's not just about not doing bad things. It's about using our lives to glorify God, using our lives to accomplish his purposes here on this earth. It's about making sure I take the abilities that he's given me, the opportunities he's given me, the energy, the life that he's breathed into me, and I use it for his glory. Make sure that nothing holds you back from using your talents in his service. And make sure that nothing holds you back from doing what you have to do to be right with him right now. It may be that there are Christians here who have strayed, who've wandered far away, who are stuck in sin right now. Don't let anything hold you back from coming and getting help. And it may be that there are some people here this evening who have not been baptized for the remission of their sins, who have not gained the benefit of the redemption that comes by Christ's blood because they have not done what Jesus asked, what Jesus told us we must do if we want to be saved. And that is that we believe that he is the Christ, the Son of God, that we're willing to confess that belief before men. Repent of the sins that put him on the cross in the first place. And if I do that, I can be baptized in water to have those sins washed away. If you need to do that and you haven't done that, don't let anything hold you back. Come get redemption. Come get help while we stand and while we sing.